today. Forgive me if I mispronounce Ahed Said Sinjab versus Muhammad Abukalin Alahabi. I think I may have made a mistake there. I apologize. Case number 81515. It's nice to see Mr. Willick and Mr. Markham. Martin, are you ready to proceed? Go ahead, Mr. Willick.
Mr. Chief Justice, Justices, Marshall Willick and April Green, legal aid for Ahed Sinjab. May it please the court. My client and her son have been living in Nevada for about 2 years. They have been forced to hide in a domestic violence shelter since the child was an infant, because the district court said that the law does not allow my client to even ask the court for an order of permanent custody, child support, or permanent protection from her husband, Mohammed. The bizarre result is that a TPO was granted, extended for a year, and then lapsed without any recourse for the abused wife to seek a permanent custody order. Immigration status should not, cannot, be allowed to determine who is entitled to equal protection of our laws. What kind of a visa you hold doesn't determine whether the police will investigate a rape or a robbery, and it doesn't control who is entitled to an order of permanent protection from abuse and domestic violence. As a matter of equal protection, it makes no sense that a resident alien can be barred from our courts entirely, which is what the district court's order says. And it makes equally no sense to claim, as Mohammed's brief does in this case, that such a person can be prosecuted or sue or be sued for anything in the state of Nevada except divorce and child custody. Under the UCCJEA, when, like in this case, a child and both of that child's parents are present in the state of Nevada, this state and only this state has jurisdiction to make an order dealing with custody of that child. The official comments to the UCCJEA make it extremely clear that that law is concerned with where people are actually living and not, quote, with any sense of technical domicile.
Mr. Willick, I just want to clarify. I thought the order that we're on appeal from is about the complaint for divorce rather than the child custody issues.
All of it.
So can you please clarify
Sure.
what exactly is up before us? I thought we were just talking about Judge Ritchie's ruling on the jurisdiction over the divorce complaint.
You are. The divorce complaint, like most divorce complaints, asked for a dissolution of marital status, child custody, child support, and in this case, because of the history of domestic violence, a permanent order of protection for the wife. The dismissal necessarily dismissed the whole case. I mean, it's all gone. There's no piece of it that survived.
Okay, but then the question, though, is about the jurisdiction, which is about the residency issue.
Right, and it's jurisdiction over all matters
right.
that are contained in the divorce. When this court decided Friedman, it said that the test for jurisdiction of a court is the UCCJEA, and that the UCCJEA, as a matter of interstate law, provides the exclusive basis for determining the court's jurisdiction. No extras, no add-ons, no also-rans, nothing else, either a stipulation or immigration status or anything else. The UCCJEA is the sole basis of determination of the jurisdiction of a court over the issue of child custody. So when a child...
The district court, though, did not reach the UCCJEA verbatim. It appeared to have addressed exclusively divorce jurisdiction, which is, I think, what Justice Kadish is getting at. So were we to reverse, you would ask us to assess UCCJEA even though the district court has not ruled on it, or would you press us to remand for an express determination on UCCJEA?
I don't believe you have to. It's being used as an illustration for why the order of dismissal is intolerable and unconscionable. It can't be allowed to stand. The issue of marital status, which I'll get to in a moment, is arguably a separate matter. It would make no sense to remand for the determination of an order of child custody and then deny the individual involved an order of protection, which is basically the order of divorce, dissolution of marital status. They should not be separated. I mean,
but they're not the identical test, are they? Or are
no,
they?
No, it's a bundle of states. Yeah. A court can have jurisdiction, as you decided in Vail.
Yeah.
The court can have jurisdiction over one issue and not another. In that case, child support, but not child custody, because the people didn't actually live here. But in this case, I think you're going to find that the court has jurisdiction over all issues.
Well, in the district court, we have two other cases pending involving, I believe, the same clients and the same lawyers. And the district court thought that his ruling on the motion to dismiss resolved all of them and divested him of jurisdiction. So he clearly thought he was resolving everything in the order.
That's exactly what happened here. The reason she's stuck in a shelter is that she can't get what normally happens in a TPO situation is you get a temporary order of protection from domestic violence. And then you were to take that time period to seek a permanent order of custody relating to the child so that you can get a permanent order in place. Here, a TPO was entered. It was extended for a year, and she was barred from ever going to court to do anything further. The UCCJEA was talked about. We talked about child custody. We talked about child support. We talked about a variety of issues that the district court held that he lacked jurisdiction to do anything. So the TPO and the protections provided by the TPO simply lapsed. And the TPO commissioner, as you know from the motions that were filed, has refused to extend it because there hasn't been any new violence. And that's because my client has been hiding in a domestic violence shelter for 2 years. I mean,
but at the heart of the issue, Mr. Willig, it seems like the district court conflated residency and domicile.
Exactly.
And that issue, I'm not sure how pervasive that is among other family court judges. I was going to ask both you and Mr. Markman to talk
if it's
about
happened,
that.
I'm sorry, to be interrupted.
Depending upon how the court were to evaluate that issue, is that something that requires an opinion from this court?
Yes.
Maybe you can comment on that.
The question boils down to who's permitted into our courts for protective orders, for child custody, for child support, and for dissolution of marital status. For 150 years, Nevada statutes have spoken about where people are present, their physical location, people that reside here, or where a person may be found. Nevada has long allowed any resident access to our courts for any of those purposes, including military members and lots of other people who have permanent domiciles somewhere else but reside in Nevada. For the past 70 years, the states and the federal government have enacted a whole host of statutes, not only the UCCJEA, but also the Uniform Interstate Family Support Act, the Uniform Services Former Spouses Protection Act, and lots of others, each of which has different and specific definitions for domicile and residence. Several of those statutes use those two terms as alternative bases for the jurisdiction of the court. So if you have either one, then you have jurisdiction to act. As Black's Law Dictionary makes clear, residence is a question of fact. It's a question of your physical location at the time of the filing of an action. Domicile is that permanent home to which one may someday return. The two words simply don't mean the same thing, and it's intellectually dishonest to conflate them, to answer your question directly. They mean different things, and yes, there is some confusion at the district court. Under the UCC, JEA, I mean,
Mr. Willick, I'm sorry. Has her F2 visa also lapsed as well, or is he still a student? What's going on with that?
I believe he graduated. He's still present. I don't believe that either one of them have lapsed. They're still, I believe, lawfully here, but I don't think it makes any difference. This court's determination should not hinge on the species of visa or whether somebody is legal or illegal in the common parlance, because if you do, you set up barriers to the courthouse door in somewhere where equal protection should say that you shouldn't have it. When this court decided RICO versus Rodriguez in 2005, it said that Immigration status is merely one of a host of factors that can be considered in determining the best interests of a child. And it made clear that in any child custody determination, equal protection and due process apply. And that's for all persons, regardless of immigration status. It quoted the United States Supreme Court for the proposition that an individual is a person under the 14th Amendment regardless of immigration status. In fact, this court held that the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment specifically prohibits discrimination based on alienage, along with race and nationality.
I'm not making that point as far as the point you're making. The point I was making is if at last she could walk into court and get a divorce.
No, not according to what the district court said. The district court reasoned that it would be illogical, and this was something that was stated in the federal court, the Park versus Barr opinion that was at the core of our dispute below, that it would make no sense to say that an illegal immigrant could have access to the courts, whereas somebody legally in the United States on a visa could not. So therefore, if it applies to one, it applies to the other. I mean, the brief of Amicus Council makes clear that immigration status and the species of visa shouldn't be the key to this decision. An F2 visa, to answer your question specifically, doesn't have any permanent domicile connections to it. An F1 visa does. But that would lead to the bizarre construct that she could file for divorce, but he couldn't.
Under Nevada law, would you say that he could not file for divorce?
No, I would not.
Okay.
Both of these parties should have access to our courts, and it doesn't make any difference which party files.
So you're not making the F1, F2 distinction at all?
No. No. I mean, look, the Amicus Council went into the great detail of federal immigration law. But the federal immigration law, like the federal court decision in Park versus Barr, was concerned with permanent domicile, not with issues of residence. Residence is a matter of Nevada state law. And that's the law that should be applied for who can walk into our courts. I mean, we have a case here where the state court, the district court judge, would bar the courthouse doors to somebody entirely, strictly because she is an alien, which is exactly what this court said no court in this state can do.
And Nevada doesn't have the California statute at issue in
it
Park
doesn't.
Anyway.
That so. 1948 statute was never adopted in Nevada and would be irrelevant. Like federal immigration law, it's concerned, that old statute is concerned with domicile.
Right.
Not with residence. It's a different legal question. There is no...
You would say residency then doesn't require a long-term intention to make it a permanent home?
No. For 40 years of divorces, I have asked the question of people back when we did prove up...
Stay at least an indefinite
period of time.
Yes.
Exactly. That is the question we have been asking people on the stand since I was admitted to the bar.
Right.
And that question does not mean that you don't have a permanent domicile somewhere else. If so, then all of the military members that I have divorced for the last 40 years were invalid. I wouldn't say that.
I guess that's where the rub is. With the F1 visa, you can't have an intent to remain.
That's domicile.
Okay.
You can't have an intent to be a permanent resident. But residency is a matter of fact at the moment. That's what federal immigration law is concerned with. This court should make a single holding, just like the California courts did in the Dick case. In Dick, they found that a resident with a renewable visa, and I don't care what the variety is, may have the dual intention of remaining in the country indefinitely by whatever means, including by renewal of a visa, and of returning to his or her home if so compelled. Doing that single holding solves this case and resolves the conflict of the other two cases, which I don't know about, but which you apparently still have pending. I mean, we have got a situation where if the lower court decision was allowed to stand, we would have to tell tens of thousands of Nevada residents who have domiciles somewhere else that they're excluded from our divorce and our custody and our child support courts. And it would lead to an increased number of situations like that of my client, where you've got abused women raising children and domestic violence shelters. The damage to innocence from this decision could be, it's hard to overstate how much harm could be done. if the court does not clearly indicate that a resident is a resident is a resident, regardless.
How would you articulate for Nevada law purposes residency under our statute for purposes of divorce?
As defined in 125.020, it says what it means. It means what it says. It's where a person is present, where a party may be found, where a party, I'm sorry, you know the statute as well as I do. It says what it means, and it should be enforced. I mean, the ruling that I'm asking for from this court is that immigration status does not limit our court's authority to enter orders as to protection from domestic violence, as to child custody, as to child support, as to dissolution of marital status.
And so to the extent we said differently previously, where we said residence was synonymous with domicile, that would need to be overruled?
Yes, that may have been a correct interpretation for tax law purposes by the Nevada Attorney General in 1954. But that was not a Nevada Supreme Court decision, and it should, may I finish that?
Yes.
That was a tax ruling from the Attorney General from many decades ago, and it wasn't a holding of this court. If you go even to the dictionary definition, yeah, to answer your question,
right,
you'll see in definition number 3 for residents, sometimes people confuse residence and domicile and use one word where they meant to use the other, but they are legally distinguished. Distinguishable concepts. Thank you. I see that my time is up.
All right. Thank you. Mr. Markman, are you ready to proceed?
Good morning, Your Honors.
Good morning.
David Markman on behalf of Mr. Al-Ghulabi. If it may please the court.
Can you pick up the mic a little bit?
Yeah.
You're kind of tall, so it's going to reach you.
I apologize. Let me speak up a little bit. So first I'd like to address some of the factual things about the protection order. I think that if you were to look at it now, going back, there's a lot of information that came out that the judge did not have originally. Muhammad has denied from the outset vehemently that there was any abuse. He has, if you look, there was a police report on the 9th. They came out there. She did not allege any physical abuse. She actually informed the officer she wished to leave the state. She came back. Muhammad came back the next day on the 10th, did as the officers instructed him to do, call them so he can get items from his apartment. At that point, they made a police report, and she claimed physical abuse.
Mr. Markman, I don't want to cut you off, but I know time's finite, and I want to take it just one level higher.
Sure.
If somebody's interested, they can return to that. Under I think what you'd like us to adopt, I just think it could put litigants in a very bad position. If somebody comes over on an F-1 visa to study, and they're doing their undergrad, well, that's 4 years. If you're like me, it's 5. And they decide to go to law school, and they get their visa. That's 8 years. So under your interpretation, for 8 years, those people could not do for their family. They couldn't get custody orders. They couldn't get divorced. They could not access the courts to litigate those kind of core issues. How do we deal with that?
Well, I would respectfully disagree. I think, first, that they can come here. You don't need domicile or residence to make a temporary custody order. So if you had to make a temporary custody order, you could. You could do as they did in Park. They went to the consulate, got divorced at the Korean consulate. So there are still avenues available. She can also, or any party, can go back to their country and file for divorce there. So it's just one thing. I think there's plenty of avenues that are open that she can file for divorce in. But if you look at the state statute and you look how Park interpreted it, they said, look, we're looking at the California statute. And I think if you instead look at the Nevada statute, if you look at Vail and you look at Aldaba, it says first in Vail, residence is synonymous with domicile, right? And it is the fact that you're here and the intent to stay. And with the F2 visa, you can't have the intent to remain. The same with the F1 visa. And it's the F class of visas that says you cannot have the intent to remain.
Now, where do you see that? Now, and I understand the F2 silent is with regard to the intent requirement. But you're basically saying it's dependent upon the F1. Where do you see that? We have to read that into that.
Well, if you look at, I believe it's Carlson and you look at Elkins and you look at Toll, they all mention it as a class. And especially if you look at Carlson footnote 2, I know they're interpreting a different visa, they're interpreting the NAFTA visa, but they talk about the TN visa. And then they mention the TD visa. And they say the TD visa is dependent, which is the dependent visa of the TN visa, is dependent on the TN visa, and therefore those restrictions are in there. So that's from Carlson. I think Elkins and Toll also talk about these specific F class. They call it more of a class. And they say, with this F class, it's a non-immigrant class. And then you can look at the... It's a non-immigrant student visa. She has to sign the same form to be here in the country. And it says it's temporary, her stay here. And that she understands that it's temporary and it's a non-immigrant visa. So I think it would be kind of absurd to say that she could have the domiciliary intent, but the person who's here cannot have a domiciliary intent.
Well, but I think Mr. Willett's point is a different one. He's saying that, and perhaps I'm attributing things to him, but my understanding of his argument, it doesn't matter whether it's F1 or F2 under Nevada law, our statute is different from the California statute that said we're not going to recognize divorces from people who are domiciliaries of California. So that's a totally different statute. But our 125.020 speaks primarily in terms of residence and specifically 6 weeks residence in Nevada. I don't see that our statutory definition, and it's a matter of state law, is the same as the definition that was in play in Park. And his point is that either F1 or F2 doesn't matter. There's residence, and that's what you need for Nevada divorce.
Well, I think if you look at the interpretation from this court in Vail, if you look at the interpretation of Alduba and the string cites, it says that you have to have, when they interpret the residence of the state and how it's interpreted, it says you have to be here for 6 weeks, and you have to have the intent to remain indefinitely.
Well, which what about this, military? How do you
which this
you,
visa? Well, there's
what's
a specific.
What's the argument against the military people clearly have a different domicile, yet they reside here and get divorced all the time?
Well,
why should it be any different for them? It's not going to change their immigration status, no matter what, even if they're divorced here. So who cares?
Well, if you look at the military, there's a specific statute. So Congress had the intent. They created the statute so that it would address domicile for military members because they can be flown across, you know, across the country. They can be flown across the world. So they had a specific statute in place for that, where Congress's intent with the non-immigrant visa is that you cannot have the subjective intent to remain. Otherwise, if you have that subjective intent, it's an unlawful intent. And I think that's where the difference is.
But aren't
is
you
there.
Kind of blurring the distinction? I mean, there are gradations of intent to remain indefinitely. And you're saying because the F1 statute forbids you from coming here to go to school with any intent to remain indefinitely for purposes of federal law, that means you can't have the same thing for purposes of divorce and intent to remain indefinitely till you're done with school. To me, I'm not so sure that's a given, that those two are coextensive.
I think if you look at the intent, and if you look at the statute, if you look at the F statute, it says temporary. So how can you say temporary on the one hand and say indefinite on the other hand?
Well, isn't indefinite? What is indefinite?
Indefinite means that you plan to remain.
6 weeks plus 2 weeks, that's an indefinite period of time.
And I would argue different. I would say indefinite is a period of time saying that I will not leave, I don't have any plans of leaving, but I plan to be here definitely. But that temporary status does not allow that. And when she's no longer a dependent, and as far as I know, as far as the record shows, she doesn't have any other immigration status. So by her not even being a dependent, she's not even legally allowed, or she's, I guess, unlawfully in the country. So I think definiteness has to be more than temporary, because how can definite and temporary reconcile with each other?
Mr. Markman, I respect your argument because you're relying on statements made in our current precedent in both Vail and in Al-Dabi, in which we have said residence is synonymous with domicile. It would appear that if the court were inclined to change that, it would have to overrule one or both of those cases and those principles. That's a stare decisis issue, isn't it? But I haven't heard anybody argue that point.
Yes, I would agree with that. It would, you know, take it to the level of stare decisis, and you would have to, I think, directly overrule that based on the precedent. And it's a long line of precedent. It's not just those two cases, right? It's it's numerous cases, and I think it is a very high threshold. And based on that, I have to agree with you that it would take that next level, that next burden to do the stare decisis.
The thing that is a little bit troublesome to me when I look at the cases that make that statement, there doesn't seem to be a lot of analysis. And, you know, frankly, it's not the only Nevada Supreme Court decision that may be a little devoid of some analysis where one would like to see it, especially in days gone by. But I think as we look at these issues going forward, it raises questions about whether we should insert better analysis and recognize the distinctions in most other areas of the law between domicile and residence. I wanted you to comment about if the court went down that road, what would be your position as to why we shouldn't? Why should we apply the rule we've previously announced and as part of our jurisprudence on a go-forward basis? Why should we not change it?
Why should you not? I think it should not be changed because it's precedent. It's been here for 100 years. So I think that weighs in the favor of obviously not changing. I think that if you want to make a change, then you open it up to everything, right? Now we have the family from New Jersey who comes here for the winter, and they come, they, you know, no longer get along, they want to get divorced. So we just open it up to the flood of everything about what intent is to remain indefinitely. So if that's what we want to do as a state, then that's what we can do as a state. I think that really falls more in line with policy. And if the legislature wants to make those decisions and make those changes, I think they're well within their means and well within their right to do so. I think you guys can also clarify it. But I think if you look at the decisions that we've seen, I think and maybe the analysis has not reached that level of what we're discussing here today, but I think if you look at the 100 years of decisions that have basically happened in the state defining it, that's what it says. And it says residence to domicile. So it's indefinite period.
Do you make of Nevada's history of being the divorce capital of the world back when you would have like sort of ranches where people would come and stay the 6 weeks, get the no-fault divorce, and be on their way?
I think we still are the divorce capital of the world. 6 weeks, indefinite period of time. I would say it's still, you know, pretty easy standard, but we still want to give some discretion to public policy nationwide, right?
How would those folks be more appropriate as a resident than someone who's been here for several years on this visa? With their spouse going to school and being a part of the community for that period of time?
I don't know that they necessarily are, but I think federal immigration, it defines that outer limit. And that's basically what Park says. We look at the California statute. We try not to use their, we try to use their interpretation to read it as narrow as possible. I mean, it reminds me somewhat of the SFR Bourne Valley, you know, where, you know, this court ruled SFR was constitutional. They came back with Bourne Valley, said, no, not the opt-in. You came back with another SFR, you know, and now it required notice. So it is constitutional. And the Ninth Circuit eventually in, I think it's Bank of America, Antelope, or it said, you know, it's a constitutional statute. So
on that end. But if you have someone who just came from Chicago and came to UNLV to go to school with their spouse while they're here,
and maybe have a permanent residence still in Chicago, but they're here for at least 4 years going to school. Are they a resident here? Can they get divorced here?
Well, they're allowed to form subjective intent to remain in Nevada. So if they form that intent, then
so they have to intend to stay permanently.
That right, because if they maintain that residence or that domicile, in New Jersey or back east or cold weather.
What if they just don't know how long they're going to stay here?
But I mean, you can look at the intentions, right? And I think that's what a lot of these cases are very fact specific, right? It's a mixture of fact and law. So you have to look at the facts. But here we're really looking more
so,
at.
So would a person have to get on the stand and testify in an uncontested no fault divorce? Do they have to say their house is in California, their whole family's in California, they come here to get a divorce? I don't know why they would, but let's say that they do. They would have to say that they have no intention of returning to California, that their intent is to remain in Nevada indefinitely, notwithstanding their ties to another state?
Yeah, and I think they do that with the declaration, right?
But wouldn't that be false in some respect? I mean, that every root, every tie, their job, their house, their parents.
Then they're opening themselves up to perjury. So if they want to perjure themselves in the court, then they can, but there's repercussions, right? If they're saying one thing and they're doing something else, then they would, I think, essentially be perjuring themselves.
Mr. Markman, let me ask you a question about the statute on the idea of this residence and domicile being synonymous that we said in Aldabi back in 1968. Doesn't the statute itself, 125.020, draw a distinction between domicile and residence in Section 2? It specifically refers to unless the cause of action accrues in a county where the parties are domiciled, then there's no jurisdiction unless the parties have been a resident of the particular area for at least 6 weeks. So this idea that we shouldn't back away from Aldabi is really would make us in line with the statute distinguishing those two things.
Well, and I think, Your Honor, that this court has interpreted Aldabi. So they made that decision, Aldabi, and they made it more recently in Vail. They said in Vail and reaffirmed this. And it's been a long history of this. So I think that this court's interpretation of the law, which is, again, granted great deference.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Markman.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel, for your excellent briefing and arguments in this case, and it will stand submitted. We'll be at ease so that counsel in the ACAB LLC versus Murray case can come to the